Welcome, welcome, welcome. I am uber excited to have Yeeve. And I have to say it like that because I was just having a conversation with Yeeve Doucette, who's our guest today, about how to pronounce his name. Because that's super important when you're talking to people, right? Is to pronounce their name as they wish, as it should be. And I called him Yeeves. And he said, no, it's like Christmas Eve. So I apologize, Yeeve, for doing that. But I'm happy to have the correct enunciation. So really excited to have Yeeve here today. He's actually the current culture coach at Dovico, which is a company based out of Moncton, New Brunswick, that actually serves clients globally. And I'm going to let him chat a little bit more a little bit later about what Dovico is and what they stand for. And he's the former CEO, but still the standing owner and founder. You know, I met Yeeve a couple months ago and was completely blown away with his very, very unique style of leadership. And that is the reason why I brought him on the show today, because I think he has a lot to educate us on. But more so, I think what he's going to do is light a little bit of a spark under each of your buttocks in how you show up to your community and how you show up in your businesses. And I feel like he's really going to inspire you. So welcome, Yeeve, to the Balanced Perspective Show. I'm really excited to have you here.
I'm excited to be here, Terri-Ann. And it's Yeeve because there's only one of me. So my wife would say that's enough. And there's a story about Christmas Eve. Can I tell the story?
Of course you can.
So, you know, Shelly's the current CEO. Her daughter, when she was little, she's probably 8 years old, she came to the office, and of course I'm French and they're English, and her mom introduces, this is my boss, you know, Yeeve. And she just looked at me with her big eyes and then hid behind her mom, and then she went back home. And like 3 or 4 days later, she comes back to her mom and says, Mom, you're so lucky. So Shelly says, what are you talking about, Nikki? Well, like, you work for a famous person. What do you mean? She says, because he has a day named after him, Christmas Eeve.
That's so adorable. So
I've been using that ever since. So yeah, like Christmas Eeve.
As you should. So, you know, obviously researching you and reading up about, you know, who you are and what you stand for, there was a very specific line that you had put in your bio that I'd like you to talk on. It said, it's impossible to change the world unless you inspire that change by changing yourself. So my favorite quote is, be the change you wish to see in the world. This is, you know, bang on, you know, with that. But it's all about shifting that perspective, which is what this entire show is about, how you show up as a leader and in your community. Can you talk to that line and what that means to you?
Yeah, so Yeah, it's you get shivers when you talked about that, because it's a reminder of why I show up the way I show up. And be the change you want to see in the world is a famous quote, of course. And like, it's impossible to change people unless you change yourself, and 100%. And I learned that the hard way. Very successful, graduated from university, high marks. I got job offers like galore. Picked the best companies in the world to work for in Ottawa, like top 10, like right as an engineer. Then came back to Moncton, got a very successful career, grew up to be vice president of a very renowned company here that was hugely successful. And at 42, I got fired. 43. Never been fired in my life, never failed in my life. Like, I came from a very good family and I had never failed. And I decided to sue because they later sold the company for $200 million. And I felt that I deserved, I had stocks in the company. I was not fired correctly. And I fought that for 9 years in court. So I fought an elephant. And there's another saying that, you know, never ask an elephant to dance unless you're prepared to finish the dance. And so there I go and I lose big time. And you can Google that, like, I lost big time. And I ended up losing everything I had, including the job. I still owed $3 million that I didn't have. And at that time, I was 52 years old. It was on my birthday that I found out. I was in Toronto with my son. I remember we were having dinner at this amazing pizza place. It was really out of this world. And So because I'm a foodie, I love food. So, and I thought, geez, you know, I lost everything. I didn't learn anything. So I decided to go back and learn. So I fired my lawyers and went into court for 2 years to learn something. If I was going to spend all that money, I'm going to learn something. And what I learned is there's something wrong with the way we run businesses today. There's something wrong with the way we motivate, we engage, and we enslave companies and people, right? And that's the change I want it to be. I didn't want to be the company that was going to be run on greed and run on money and manipulation. I want it to be the company that's going to be run on love, right? I want it to be the company that's run on humans, human beings, right? And not run human beings down. So I wanted to be that change, right? And so, yeah, that started my journey. Now, I think I was always a good guy and a good manager, and I had good talents. That's why I went to become vice president of that company. And later on, I became a board director of a big, huge Medivy Blue Cross. So I'm very, very successful, but then I lost everything and I had lots of questions, right? So I found myself roaming around and asking myself, what's the meaning of this life, right? Now, that's a bad idea. So don't do that. And then I came across a couple of quotes, and one of them was this one, you know, be the change you want to see in the world. And there's no way to change anyone. The only thing you have, you're responsible for changing yourself. So what is the problem with current management style? And the management that we've used, the management's like principle that we've used so far, like empowerment and all this crap. It's fucking crap. Sorry. It's crap. Is this PG? So it's all crap. And it's brought us to where we are today. So it served us, right? But there's an awakening going on. We've broken the human. Like you can't ask for more. Like you're pushing the human to the extent, like we're breaking. And you can see that in mental health. It's the fastest. When I was a board member of Medivy, I saw the stats. And the fastest rising threat today, and it's a virus, and it's mental health, right? And so what's going on? Well, we built this incubator that we're asking more and more and more, and the glory to be more. Like, look at TikTok. Have you been on that thing?
I try not to be.
Like, or Facebook, or any, like, it's the glory to be more, right? Like, we have there's no end to it, right? The more you have, the more you want, and you just want more cars, more things. And, like, okay, that's wrong, 100% wrong. There's got to be a better way to live in abundance, right? And enjoy. Right, without destroying everything around you. Yeah, so I started my path at 52. So that was like 9 years ago, yeah. I thought, I'm going to build a different kind of company, and I'm going to be the change I want to see in the world. So I didn't set out to go to change anybody. I said, I want to change the way I manage people. I want to change the way we construct our company. I want to change the way people show up for work. And I'm going to have to change the way I show up for work. Which means that, you know, when I was CEO, what does a CEO do? Yeah, what, yeah, so like it's more than a title, right? And I recall this, like when we had my past business that the guy I sued on court there, and he was asked by my lawyer, what is it do you do? And after a day and a half, he said, well, I got all the money, so I must have done something. And I thought, oh my God, no, right? So I became kind of obsessed, if you want, in flipping every single theory that we have of how to manage and how to grow and how to build a company on its head. And that's when it started. So
it's so fascinating to me because, you know, I'm positive there are other people that have been in similar spaces. So been in a space where everything that you had worked for and fought for your entire life, you know, that you have built your entire identity around, has been ripped from you, right? You know, those are people who've lost their businesses and gone bankrupt, people who've lost their marriages, mm-hmm. right? Like this stuff happens in everyday life all around. I think the difference that I feel happened with you that I'm it's unfortunate, doesn't happen with most, is you then went on a hunt. You're like, something is not right here. There is something dramatically wrong with the way that we as leaders are showing up in, you know, the places that we manage and with the people that we manage. We're putting more emphasis on fixing and changing them and barely no emphasis on fixing and changing ourselves. And to be the change is to be the lighthouse, to be that beacon of light that pulls people towards, you know, being the change for themselves, whatever that change is. And what I like about your story is you, at a later time in life, decided that, okay, I'm on the hunt, if you will, for what that is. And I, you know, if I think I'm listening to you correctly, you didn't have the answers. You just went on the search for it. So where did you start? Like, where does somebody go to search, okay, how do I show up and be a better leader? You know, did you read books? I don't think there was podcasts then, was there?
Yes, there were. but yes, I read a lot of books. I still do. I have a challenge right now with my daughter-in-law to read 100 books this year. She's winning, by the way. So I read a lot of books. I read a lot of podcasts. I research a lot. And the more I get into where I am, the more I actually spend time learning. And I spend a lot of money, a lot of time in educating myself. Yeah, that's for sure. No doubt about that. Where do you start? Well, I remember going and I had won an award like the year or two after. It was a KPMG award, Entrepreneur of the Year. And there was a whole bunch of us who had won, and we all went there. We went to Newfoundland. It's a great thing. Like, it's beautiful, right? So we all went there, and I brought a couple of people down, and we all dressed in tux, and my son was there, and my father was there. It was really great, right? And I remember I did my little speech, because you don't know who's going to win. Like, it was 50 people, 50 entrepreneurs, best entrepreneurs of our time in Canada, and we all go there, right? And then we all wrote a speech in case we won. So then they have, like, the finals and the semifinals, blah, blah, and they didn't win. And everybody gave a little speech. And what I noticed is we all had the same speech. I want to thank my wife. I want to thank my kids. I want to thank the employees, right? And I thought, oh my God, this is just a glorified me, right? It's like, where are the team? Where is the team? Like, where are they? Right? Like, they're not here, right? And so we've built this society that nuage, that glorifies one person, the captain of the team. The captain of the team takes the trophy around the ice. He's the person who won everything. And if you look at our pay structure, if you look at our storytelling, if you look at any, I defy you, like Apple, who's the boss of Apple? Microsoft, right? You think of one person. It's not one person, right? It's a team of people. That's how innovation happens. That's how things grow. It's a community that makes it happen. It's not one person, right? But we've glorified this because it's an easy story to believe. They're hero. Every hero or heroine that you have when you've grown up, right? Wonder Woman, you know, Thor, right? It's all about the person. Iron Man, my favorite, right? We all want to grow up and be these people. And this is the fallacy. It takes a community to make you survive. That's what human beings mean, right? It means that you're part of something. Human means that you're the hero. Being means you're part of something.
And this is what fascinated me, you know, when I came to Dovaco and, you know, literally reached out through social media. You know, we knew of each other, we didn't know each other. I'm like, hey, Eve, can we go for coffee? I want to know more about you, because you are like very interesting on the way you were showing up on social media. You just had me intrigued, right? I had no idea that I was going to walk into what I walked into. And so for those of you, let me just paint the picture for you. So I meet Eve in Moncton, New Brunswick at this coffee shop. And, you know, he shares a little bit of what he just did, you know, with all of you, you know, his story, his beginnings, and a little bit about his why. And then he's like, do you want to come up? And I'm like, come up where? He's like, well, the offices are right upstairs. And so I go upstairs, and there's this, you know, the first thing I see is everyone's smiling. Like, nobody looks stressed. Everyone's smiling. They're all really, really happy. You have a community kitchen. Like, you literally walk into a community kitchen. That's the first thing I saw. where people are, you know, literally breaking bread together and eating, I think it was soup day. And Eve's wife had showed up with like a veggie tray, you know, so everybody could spend time. And one by one, people, you know, were getting up and coming over and introducing themselves. And they were just prompted on their own to share why they were so excited about working at Dovico, what their why was. Oh, and what I want you to share right now is the challenge that you do with your team, this incentive for them to go and, what is it, move through their fears? Oh, this one's good. You got to share this one.
Yeah, so the communicate, well, everybody has an office at Dovico, right? And everybody, it's kind of interesting because every day, every year we change offices. And everybody change offices. And I don't get to pick my office. And the CEO doesn't get to pick their office. There's a person in charge and they pick the office for you. And you change. So why is that important? Because the one thing that is guaranteed, there's two things, death and change. Fair. And I have access to that. Right? Those three things are guaranteed. And, you know, when the coronavirus hit and we were asked to all work from home, it took us literally 30 minutes to shift our operation from the office to home. 30 minutes.
Wow.
And the reason we're so ready, it's because we practice change, right? So the fundamental of that, like that's the basic, changing an office. Like when we started that, people said, well, I don't want to change offices, my office. No. You can work anywhere. I don't like working there. It's like too many people or too noisy or not noisy enough. And say, yeah, you got to learn to work there because that's your art, right? So the community kitchen is a center. So everybody has an office with a window. It's important. So they can close the door and look outside and work. Why? Because they're human beings, right? Why do they have an office? Because my biggest cost is not my office. My biggest cost is my manpower, right? So why is that important? Well, if they're not productive because they can't close their door, they're not comfortable in their home, well, I lose productivity. Like, it's just math, right? Why the kitchen? Well, how, you know, what's the fuel for a human?
Food.
Right? So we fill the kitchen with amazing food. Why? Because people don't know what amazing food looks like. They don't know that a carrot shouldn't be deep fried. Right? We don't know that. We think that's normal to deep fry a potato and we call that a vegetable. That's no longer a vegetable.
The nutrients are gone.
Right. If you take an avocado, you deep fry it, like you've changed that avocado into something else. It's something else.
That's exactly it. But I think, you know, the point here is, you know, you've basically given your team the power of understanding that change is constant. It's going to continue to happen in our world. I mean, look at what we're living through right now. And your team was able to quickly adapt because this is kind of their jam. This is what they do.
That's what they do. And like I checked with them like this week, I've been checking with them one-on-one and they're all working hard and engaged and really amazing actually. And the program you spoke of is called Courage, right? So we run a flat organization. Like we have one meeting a week, basically. We don't have meetings typically, right?
Wow.
And the reason we can do that is we run flat. And the reason we can run flat is we treat them like human beings. So they can make their own decision, but we run on principles, not rules. So we have principles, not rules. Okay? Principles are not rules. Okay. And the intent is more important than the intention of what we do is more important than the rules. Okay.
Share a little bit of it, even what that means.
Yeah. So we have a program called Courage. You're alluded to it. So the intent is more important than the program. The program's called Courage. Okay. Okay, the intent is more important than the program, all right? Okay, the name of the program is the intention. So courage is the intention.
Exactly, yes. Okay,
that's the intention. What are the rules? The rules are you can have $3,000 per employee per year to go spend on finding courage. That's the rules.
The thing that I, so in my time, my quick time when I was in your community kitchen, I met two people that work for you. that had a story around them wanting to move through something that they were afraid of. I think there was one person that was going to run a marathon.
Yeah, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then there was another individual that I think was writing their first book.
Okay, that'd be Benoit probably. Yeah, okay. We have three authors in the office. It could be Benoit or Gerard or Jeff. Yeah.
I think it's Jeff. But I'm not sure. But what I found fascinating is, so again, like everything about the way in which that you have, you know, created this flat company where, you know, you're doing one meeting a week and you have a community kitchen and you're teaching people how to fuel their bodies. And there seems to be so much, you know, there was hugging and there was eye contact and there was just so much joy. And then you added this extra layer of, you know, humanity to it by saying, like, I know you're afraid of something. There's something that you've been procrastinating on or just not doing. And what I felt the gist of it was, is if fear is the thing that you're, you know, that if fear is the thing that's stopping you, that's one thing. But if money, accountability, and encouragement is the thing that's actually really stopping you, let me just take that barrier out of the way so that you can go and do all the things that you are humanly, you know, potential to do. And you can see it in people, how encouraged they are and how supported they feel. Where did you come up with this idea?
So let's think about fundamentals, right? Fundamentals of running a business. So I got tired of coming up with all the ideas. And I thought, why am I the only one coming up with ideas and taking risk here? And I thought, this is ridiculous, right? But I didn't realize that the reason is that I like to take risk and not everybody has the same risk tolerance, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So courage is the antidote for risk. If you have courage, there's no risk. Right?
Fair.
And you find courage by doing what you love to do. All right?
So true. So true. Okay. Keep going, sir. Keep going.
So here I go. I'm 60 years old and I want to deepen my practice in yoga. So I decide that I want to become a yoga teacher. So I decide, because it was courageous for me, to go to Tulum by myself. First trip I've ever taken by myself, like to Tulum, Mexico, right, by myself. I had to tell my wife that. And it was a yoga training, and my family is very religious, so I had to tell my mom and my sister that I'm going to take yoga, which is like the devil.
Wow. For them. Yeah.
And then I'm a man at 60 years old. I'm thinking, why am I doing this? Like, what? I just like it. So I decided to go. And with the help of Shelly, she pushed me to go. And I go. And it changed my life. That week that I spent in Baptiste yoga training changed my life. And I thought, oh my God, I just want everybody to come here and do exactly that. Right? And then I thought, hold on now. That's what a boss does. He would say, I want everybody to go do what I've done.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But the essence of what I did is I actually removed the barrier of courage by saying I gave myself permission with Shelly to do it. I was supported. And I had the financial backing of Doloco to pay for it. So I came back and I said, I want everybody to do that. But not go take yoga. I want to remove the barrier by saying whatever you want to do, I don't care what it is. And I'll give you some example. What I care is that it's meaningful to you. And I'm going to give you some money. I'm going to remove the barrier of support because I'm there to support you. I'll give you the time. I'll give you the support. And I'm going to give you some money because it's going to cost money, right? One of the employees, well, she's got five kids at home. She's never pampered herself, right? So her courage was to spend a day in a spa.
Wow.
And it changed her life. Yeah. Jeff's courage, because as you may or may not know, he wrote a book actually on it. He got molested or sexually abused when he was a kid by his dad. And he came out, he wrote that book while he was a Doboko. But he had this when he was a child. What kept him alive was this dream of running across the Golden Gate Bridge in California, in Los Angeles, I think it is. And that's a dream that he had. And he's fearful of that because that's a dream that he believed that he was going to run and with his family on that. So I said, okay, well, I'll pay for that. So he was going to go, he was planning to go this summer. So it's going to have to be next year. And that was courageous for him because he had this story in his head that he will never achieve that, right? It was a story that he had when he was a kid that kept him alive.
Wow.
Benoit, who wrote the book, has been writing this book for 10 years. He didn't have the courage to find a publicist. So I said, well, we'll help you find a publicist and we'll pay for it, right? So you don't know. And the reason this is important for business is to find courage is if you enable people to find courage in one thing, right? Whatever you practice, you become. So you become courageous in something, you're going to become courageous everywhere. So you asked me earlier on, how did I start? I started with taking one small step. And my first step was this, right? I said, I have no name yet. I have no money. I can't wait to become a philanthropist. I'll never be a millionaire. At 52, I've lost everything. What is it that I can do to give now? I don't want to wait until I have a lot of money to give back to my community. And how am I going to rebuild myself? And I thought, well, everybody knows everything about me anyway. It's been very public. The court case was very public. I said, I'm going to do a video every week. So that's when I became very transparent on social media. That was my first act of courage, if you want. And that led me to a video every day, which led me to yoga online, which led me to talking to you, right? But it's like whatever you practice, you become. So think about that, right? So whatever you're asking people to practice in your work, if you're practicing fear, they'll become fearful. So you wonder why they're not taking risk and they're not like going, they're not engaged or they're leaving. It's because you're practicing that with them. You're using a carrot and a stick. If you don't do this, I'll beat you. But if you do this, you get money. And the money works for a certain period of time. But after a while, you get tired of that. And the sticks get bigger, right? And that's fear. Yeah. So you're practicing fear and you're practicing manipulation. What I'm practicing is you choose. I'm practicing you are in charge of your life, right? You are in charge of making decisions. You're responsible for it. We don't check when people come in and when people leave. We have unlimited sick days. People have 6 weeks of holidays. And they don't abuse, nobody abuses it. Like it's like, nobody, because why? Because they're human. They're human beings and you're responsible for it. If you treat people like thieves, they'll become thieves. But if you treat them like human beings, they'll become human beings, right?
You are what you focus on. And that's it's so true and it's so real, but it's such a, so many people sort of ignore that that's a fact, right? And you've made this decision in your company to allow people, you know, to your point, to just be, but you've also empowered them to be more than maybe what they could have imagined or wished for. I think the part that I think touches my, like the depths of my heart is the vulnerability I witness when I see you talk about, you know, the courage that your team has had, the transformation these individuals have been able to experience. And that's the butterfly effect, right? Like when somebody, you know, I know for myself, you know, when I get to that space where I got to do something amazing, you know, the second you do something amazing, then it's the sky's kind of the limit. You're like, I can do anything. But then you become that beacon of hope for other people that are in, you know, your trajectory. So your children, your spouses, your friends, your family, the people that you partner up with, like they then see, well, she said that she could do it and then she did it.
Yeah.
I bet you I can do it too. And you've just kind of taken one little barrier away and said, okay, go take over the world. Go do these amazing things because your spouse will thank you for it. Your children will also go do amazing things with their lives because of that. So I want to ask you this question because I know this is going to be, you know, in the back of everyone's mind. It's certainly in the back of my mind is how has this shifted and changed the, you know, the organization as a whole? Has there been, you know, a change on the bottom line? Has there been a change in productivity? Has the, like, what have the positive changes been since implementing this, you know, flat horizontal, you know, leadership style?
Well, somebody asked me that question before. So as a leader, I challenge every single leader out there to see how many days of holidays that they take. So I took 6 weeks last year. I got zero phone calls, zero email, zero meeting, and the company grew. We hired people. We let go people, right? We got more sales. We launched products, all without me.
Whoa.
Yeah, so if you want to live a life, and they gave me, when I was at the company I was at before, they gave me this little thing. Hold on here, I had it. They gave me this little statue of a man over there. So this dates back 20 years ago. So can you see that? It's a man sitting on a throne, right?
You see it? I do. Is he holding a phone with an antenna?
He's holding a phone, right? And it's like a wire antenna. It's one of these true phones, right? So they gave me that because I couldn't. And I came from a place I couldn't get a rest, right? And I remember we were canoeing, my wife and I, in Kushubrek Park. We're out in the lake. And a RCMP officer comes over at bullhorn. Mr. Doucet, emergency. So I pedal there. I get there. What's the problem? There's an emergency at work. You have to call this person. So I call. And it was actually a secretary that actually was panicking because we were supposed to have a meeting in the morning, Monday. And the customer hadn't confirmed, and she didn't know what to do.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, there's something wrong with this picture. When I arrived at the office on Monday, I noticed that there were people lined up to ask me questions. Lined up to ask me questions. So my job as a boss was to actually make decisions. And I thought, okay, well, making decisions is not what I do. That's not what I do. If you're coming in here to ask me about your job, what you should decide, I'm not doing a good job. Right? So now, I don't make the decisions you do. Right? Every single person at Dovaco is in charge of, they're their own CEO of their job. They have to make the decisions, right? And that allows me to focus on what I want to do, to work on the business, the vision, the strategy, the new products, right? It allows me to talk to customers. It allows me to coach the team. It allows me to work on the fundamentals, right?
So many people that are in leadership roles right now are just like, they're shaking their head because you and I both know that a very large percentage of individuals, and I'm not saying that they're doing this on purpose, but it's sort of like what society has taught us as leaders is, you know, we need to have all the answers because if we don't have all the answers, we must not be a very good boss, a very good leader, a very good manager. Mm. We get stuck in this place of ego, if you will, that I need to have all the answers, which is why it's very difficult to, you know, to move the needle forward when you're trying to both scale a business and grow a team. Because everybody needs you. Everybody needs you. And to your point, you go on vacation, a leader in my world, never truly, you know, the folks that I coach, they never truly get a vacation because they've set it up that they are the one and only. They have all the answers, right? They're the almighty. And completely shifted this, right? You know, right on its axis and said, listen, my job as a leader is to lead. So to lead by example. To allow you to lead yourself. And I think a perfect example of this, if you're okay with me sharing, is you had an individual that worked for you that decided that they were going to have a new role. And the role didn't even exist. Right? No. Like they came to your office, I believe, and were like, I have a passion in writing. I might like completely annihilate this, but they have a passion in writing. They can see themselves as sort of, you know, content writing and blogging for the business in a way that's going to be positive to the business. And I believe that that's going to be my new role on a go forward basis. No, like I literally thought this was a joke when you told me this story. But the reality is we'll tell people what you said, tell people how that came about and then how you responded.
Well, his name is Jeff. It's the writer of the book that we just talked about. Same. Like, there's a few of these examples that work, but I'll give you Jeff. It's a few guys. It ends up to be a really interesting thing, right? Before I go there, I want to just challenge you on something.
Yes, please do.
Can you predict the future?
Oh, every time you ask me these types of questions, I'm always nervous. So I would say the answer is probably no.
Do you know anybody that can predict the future?
No, I know people who say they can.
But do you believe them?
No.
Yeah. So knowing the answer is pretending that you can predict the future.
Oh, bam. That's like a mic drop moment. If I had like a microphone in my hand right now, I would just drop it so everyone could hear the bang. Okay. Yeah. So
pretending you know the answer is being a fake leader.
Well, that hurts.
Yeah. Because you're lying to yourself.
You just hit us all right to our core.
Being a good leader means that you don't have the answer and you're okay with it.
and here's the underline, and you are okay with it.
And you're okay with it. Yeah. Yeah, meaning that you still do what you love to do and you're pushing forward, even though you know that you don't know the answer, right?
Isn't that kind of the beauty of life? You know, I think back into the beginning of my, you know, my career in entrepreneurship, like I'm not even sure I know what I'm doing now, you know, for half the time. But yeah. I think that's kind of the beauty of it. And somewhere along the line, to your point, we believe because of some picture that's painted in front of us that we're supposed to have all the answers. But I really like how you kind of very succinctly put that, like, as a leader, if I have all the answers, I am basically lying, which I think is a very harsh, harsh reality that is going to be a hard pill to swallow for most, including myself, because I like having all the answers.
Yeah, but it's comfortable.
It is comfortable.
Yeah, but like if you take my yoga class, which I teach at noon every day, I'll teach you how to be uncomfortable.
In yoga?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, life is like life is being okay in being uncomfortable.
That's
where growth happens. Growth happens in being uncomfortable. You're not growing when you're sitting on your lazy boy, drinking a glass of wine or on your porch. No, nobody, nothing's growing over there. Like it's just rotting there. Yeah. You're growing when you're uncomfortable. If you think you know the answer, you're dead.
Wow.
Like you're dying. You're dying because you're not learning. You're dying because you are stuck on this phrase, like I know the answer.
Mm.
And like, so once you're stuck there, right, there's no room for anything else, right? There's no room. But I know you. I've only met you a few times, but I know you. So this is the nuance, right? Mm-hmm. It's understanding that you don't know the answer, but you know exactly what to do, and you're okay with that.
Fair.
So what you do is you say, I'm going to know exactly what to do, but if somebody asks you, says, I don't know, but I know exactly what I'm doing, but I don't know, but I know, but I don't know, right? But you're just doing it, right? And you're doing it because you love doing it, and it speaks to your body, your whole essence of who you are. You're just doing it, and that's why people are attracted to you. Because of that energy.
True.
It's not because you're lying that they're attracted to you. They're attracted to you because in your bones, in your body, you know you're doing the right thing.
And isn't that what we all want to do in the end? Like I think the reality of it, right, Yves, is at the end of the day, most people are good humans. Most leaders actually just want to do amazing things. And I think what you've just done for us is kind of given us a sigh of relief to say, okay, like, whoa, dude, you do not need to know all the answers. You need to be accepting of the journey that, you know, is in front of you as a leader. You need to be humble enough to kind of announce to people like, you know what, I don't know all the answers, but I'm totally okay with, you know, you doing what you think is best, because that's pure trust. And that's giving people the ability to be, you know, to your point, the CEO of their own destiny and the CEO of their own role within the business. It's relieving to the shoulders to feel that, right?
So I would say that you are a great leader because you're in discovery, not because you have the answer. You're a discovery of yourself and you're a discovery of what you can do. And everything you do is a discovery. Like you reached out to me to discover.
True.
And that took courage. And the reason that you were courageous enough to do it is because you're in discovery. And that was uncomfortable. And the reason you were willing to do that is because you're in discovery. So when you're in discovery, like I can speak science about this, how it, like I won't, but I can speak how it happens here. I'm a spiritual scientist, so that's what I do, but I won't go into that today. But
another show.
You're basically like, it's a feeling when you're doing something that's like in line with what you are and who you are, you're discovering something. It's like you're regenerating your whole body. You feel alive, right? Because your hormones are being like dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, they're all being produced, right? And your brain is exploding with energy because you're discovering something you didn't know, right? The job of a leader is not to know the answer. I'm going to finish with that and then I'll go back to Jeff. The job of the leader is to help people discover for themselves.
Ooh.
Right? So your job is to give tools and directions to look so they can discover for themselves, right? To give tools and directions to look. That's the job, right? And if you do that and they discover for themselves, you're building leaders, because every single person in this world is made to be a leader. Every single person. There's not like, you don't wake up and say, I'm a leader. No, no. Every single person, and I learned this. I learned this the hard way. Every single person is a leader. Every single person. And when the time's right, that leader will show up. Your job as a leader is to create leaders, not to discover them, to create them. And you create them by letting them discover for themselves. That's how you do that. And that's the job. And if you could do that, you will never work a day in your life.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredibly powerful, but it's also, it's extremely inspiring, because I think the impact you can make as an individual is exponential if you follow that process, right? Because it is, it's like the rubber band effect. Trying to fix everyone and change everyone is exhausting. And you know, you'll get a few of them that'll follow the lead and they'll do what you asked, and you know, maybe they go off and do great things. But it just, you know, what I'm hearing and what I'm feeling is this power that comes from just kind of letting go, showing up in your raw, authentic self, you know, inspiring others to be their own change by you being the change, right? And then kind of watching them blossom, but then they go do it too.
Just create the environment that they can discover for themselves.
Ah, oh, so amazing.
That's a simple, like, that's it, right? That's the whole thing, right? Because you, leading by example will let you 30% of people follow you. That's what's approximately, right? Telling them what to do will probably change another 20.
Mm.
But then you're left with like 50% of your people are not changing. The one thing that will make everybody change is creating an environment so they can discover for themselves. That will have 100% of people change.
I just got goosies on my arm. I got goosies on my goosie.
So, I want to talk about Jeff. So Jeff was a programmer. So he came into Dovaco as a programmer and he wasn't happy. So he comes to see me and he says, I'm not happy. I don't like this. And I said, what do you want to do? He said, well, I'd like to do support. I said, well, okay, migrate your way to support. Okay, so he said, how do I do that? I said, well, I wake up every morning and go help support. Right? So support is like, was at the time less paid than programming, right? So we migrated into support, kept his salary. He was a great support guy. Then eventually he said, I want to do support anymore. I want to do something else. And what do you want to do? He said, I want to write. I said, well, sure, start writing. Well, what do you mean? I said, well, you start writing every day, right? Just write every day. So write a blog. So he started writing a blog, and he started writing a blog about his sexual abuse. And he started writing about that. And then he wrote a book about it. And he continued writing. And I encouraged him to write. Then I gave him some tasks to write. And eventually, he became our blogger. Right? Now, the interesting thing about that is we didn't have a position for either the support tech or the blogger. And today, we generate more leads from his blogs than any marketing campaign that we do.
Shut the front door. Mm-hmm. Oh, I need to just kind of like recap that. So basically this individual, this human comes in, he's working in a position. He decides, you know what? I don't entirely like this specific position, because you have this infrastructure in place where it's like easy to go talk to other individuals in the company. He comes and says, hey, here's this other area of the business that there's no job ad for that you're not looking to fill. that I feel like I would be better suited and I'd like to go there. And you're like, you know what? Here, sure. Let's move you over there. You're going to have a reduced pay. And here's what this looks like.
He reduces pay.
Oh, he didn't reduce his pay.
No.
Oh my goodness gracious. Okay. And so then from there, he then discovers that he has a love affection for writing and you allow him and encourage him to, you know, kind of flourish in that space. And now the majority of your leads are coming from that.
Yeah. So he invested in something he loved to do. He did it on his own. Like we gave him the time for it. We gave the environment for him to discover. Right. We all supported him. He did it. And as he grew in competence and skill level, we just gave him more job until he became, okay, well, let's just move over there. So just take the job. And he created his own job that we didn't have. Yeah.
Wow. And so is that what he does? Like part-time, full-time, side hustle? He does that full-time.
Full-time. Yeah. He's a blog writer for us. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a job, right? That we didn't have, right?
Correct. Yeah. I have never heard of anybody ever doing this.
I have at least like 3 or 4 examples of that people create their own jobs, right? At least 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 examples. Yeah. People create their own jobs.
If you went out and did a survey right now with employees, right? Like, you know, so many employees are struggling because A, they work for companies that are not like you're describing, but they also are in positions that maybe, you know, over time they are no longer intrigued by, interested in, they're not fed by, but they're stuck, right? And, you know, what an amazing experience for not only the company, I see the benefits for the company, but from like an employee perspective to walk in every day, knowing that you're fully supported to be who you are authentically, man, the dividends that would feed back to the company would just be tenfold. So kudos to you, Eve, for...
I just did it for myself too, right? Like, I don't know if you noticed, I just resigned as CEO of the company and I report to the CEO.
Yes.
I created this new job that I have. Did it.
And what are you? You're the culture coach.
I'm a culture. That doesn't exist. So I am now, you know, coaching our team to become more engaged and we're building products to deliver to other companies to help build their engagement. And in times when we need to be more mindful and more aware and more conscious of mindfulness, we're building a product for that, right? It's out there already. It's called Tuba, actually. And so I'm leading that team, which that didn't exist before. I'm doing yoga, which didn't exist before. So I'm creating a new position that doesn't exist. And I don't even know what it's going to look like in a year, right? So you said, yeah. So what happens after a while is I was CEO and I liked doing the job, but I was bored. So what I did is I said, hey, anybody else want to do this, right? But not like that. I actually went around and I saw who had the potential. So over the last years or so, I graduated some people internally so they can take my job. And that's what Jeff did too. He didn't leave his position. He trained somebody to replace him. So he became obsolete.
Oh, wow.
So you become obsolete. That's the key. Then you're free. As you become obsolete, you get more and more time, right? Because there's always somebody wanting to do the job you're doing. Yep. So you train someone to do that job and then you get more time to work on what you want to work on and then you become somebody else. So that like that, right? So why is that important? Well, because we all get bored. Like Shelly is she's doing 10 times the job I'm doing. Like she's really rocking it.
She's on fire right now.
She's on fire, right? So like it'd be mean for me not to allow her to do that. And it would be mean for me to stay there just because I want the title.
Okay. I want to talk about that because we talked a little bit about this, you know, off mic before the recording started. And this idea of being a leader without a title. I mean, most people have read the book, but man, that's hard, right? There's a lot of ego involved with getting to a specific level of executive in your position, right? Like, you know, like, who are you? What do you do? That's like kind of like the common networking question. And it's like, I'm the CEO of XYZ company. Nobody wants to say that they're not. They're like, man, I worked my butt off to get here. So what's like, how are you handling this new kind of, I mean, you gave yourself a title, but it's just sort of like, it's like new, right? So how are you handling, like, I'm not the CEO anymore?
Well, it was a transition. I had to let go of the fact that people may not call me, like people may not like me. I may not get invited to podcasts or Facebook Lives. People may not look, you know. But then I remembered something. What you do is not who you are. It's an expression of who you are, right? It's so everything you have are just expressions of who you are. It's not you. The you is not that. It doesn't, like, I wrote in this book. I wrote this book, right? This is not me. This is an expression of who I am, right? It's not me, but people will say, well, I'm an author. Okay, but it's not me. It's just an expression. What happened? Because I learned when I lost my title and lost everything, I thought, if I lose my title, I lose my car, I lose my house, I lose my money, I lose everything. Like, I'm there driving my wife's bike to work because that's all I had. And I'm thinking, I'm driving a women's bike here to work. And people are going to say, here's this 52-year-old man, and the only thing he can afford is like a bike. And the shame that came over me. The shame, and people use shame as a tool, right, to like whip you to nothing, right? And I realized that at that time that I'm not the titles. I am not the clothes. I am not the things. These are just simply expressions of who I am. And if you practice the expression, right, as an expression, and you just want to discover more expressions, then life becomes like a beautiful experiment on learning how to express yourself, right, with your talents. And you get rid of the titles. So I do this, I did this perfect, like purposely. Like I told you before, I practice change, right? That this is a change. I got rid of the title on purpose because I knew it was going to be hard, right? And making it uncomfortable is when you learn something. Yeah.
So what have you learned?
Oh my God, that I'm not the title. I've discovered new things about myself that I didn't know. I love my new job that, like, basically I spend more time with coaching and discovering, and like we're building this product that's really going to be amazing. I love that. Yeah, I discovered that Shelly's an amazing leader. Like, I've discovered more about myself and my self-reliant, like that I'm not attached to that position. And more importantly, that if I love what I'm doing and I radiate like that, people are going to come and find me no matter what I do. And it doesn't matter if I'm painting or if I'm scraping the snow or if I'm a, you know, if I'm a, it doesn't matter. Like, titles don't matter. We make it matter, but it really doesn't matter. At the end of the cycle, it doesn't matter. What matters is that you pursued every expression of you that you can find to the extent and the deepness that you must, right? And the problem with titles is, and the answers, it's the same problem, is you're comfortable. And as soon as you're comfortable, yeah, you gotta change something. You gotta get off that couch and put your butt in gear, because nothing happens in comfort, right? Like, you go to the gym and then you feel the muscle the next day, right? You say, oh, that hurts. I don't want to go to that. No, that's your muscle rebuilding itself. It hurts because you, like at night when you stretch your muscle, you broke your muscle. You ripped it, right? That's what you did. And then at night it rebuilds like this, right? And the next day when you stretch, well, it stretches like that, it hurts, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it gets stronger. Like those fingers, like it, and then you break it again. And that, you're telling your brain, feed that muscle, make it stronger. So it's going to feed it. So every time it feeds, that's what builds muscle. The brain's the same thing. If you're not if you're uncomfortable, it's going to learn, right, to be uncomfortable. And you're building strength. The brain's the same thing as a muscle. It works the same way, right? And if you continuously stay in the uncomfortableness, like, so how does that work? Like, being uncomfortable is doing something that you can feel your sweat, like your, like public speaking is like that. Having a difficult conversation is like that. letting people discover themselves is like that, right? Like just standing in sun and watching them discover without telling them what to do. That's uncomfortable for you.
It is super uncomfortable, but I think, you know, you've dropped a lot of really golden nuggets here that I think, you know, I also really hope that people make actionable in their lives. And, you know, if I can sort of recap in a few short points is, you know, number one, I think you need, you know, from what you're saying is, you know, remove your connection to your title. I mean, I get that in some organizations, titles, I suppose, still matter, but remove your connection. You are not your title, to your point. Remember that you don't have to have all the answers and be okay with what that looks and feels like. Get comfy in that. And be that beacon of hope, be that beacon of light for others, you know, to your point, be the change that you wish to see in your company, you wish to see in your employees. They can't do it if you're not it. You can't make them become something. You got to become something yourself. And so what does that new version of yourself look like? And you didn't say it, but this is what I grabbed. I think you just need to be forever curious, right? Like you're forever curious, like regardless of your age and yeah. You know, all of the experiences you have previous to this moment, you're still like ridiculously curious at yeah. What this world has to offer you, but also what you have to offer it. I love that you have made that conscious decision to be okay that your legacy will not be dollars and cents. It's going to be the impact that you make on others. I think there's so much more power in that, by the way.
Yeah, there is. That's real power, actually. Impact is real power.
I agree.
Impact on your kids, how you stand up when you're falling down, you know, how you react to things. That's impact, right?
It is.
Being curious is impactful. Being joyful is impactful. Like, impact is more powerful than money. You can always make money. And I've proven it.
Yes. Yeah.
Money. I can rise up from this debt. Anybody can. Like, yeah. Look, who am I to do this, right? You can always make money. Yeah. You just have to detach yourself from the perception of who you are.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's like, there's nothing wrong with having a title, by the way. And there's nothing wrong with having a good car. And there's nothing wrong with making money. There's nothing wrong with having nice things are nice. It becomes wrong when you become that, when you can't let it go, when you're defined by that, when the first thing you say is, I'm the CEO of the company.
Yeah.
And for you, it's a matter of pride. It's time to let it go. Yeah.
Time to let it go.
Yeah.
So Yves, a couple questions. Number one, what was that book called?
Which one?
The one that you wrote.
Oh, it's called I Am a Seed.
I Am a Seed. And if people want to purchase that book, where would they buy it?
They can go at evedoucette.com.
Okay.
Perfect. They can get the link to that. If they're in Moncton, I'll deliver. So yeah, no worries.
And then they get to meet you, which would be super. Yeah.
Well, maybe not because we're practicing social distancing. So.
Oh, yeah, I suppose yeah. We are doing that right
now. But they can message me too. And I can. So most of the times that people, it's recommended. Like I get a lot of sales by people reading it and then they, because I'm not advertising it. So it's like, you're my advertising. So most people, it comes from referral. Okay. And so I go and I see who you're, like you will refer to a friend.
Yes.
And it's pretty raw and pretty deep. So like this is not for,
it's like journal prompting, right? Like it gets you to go through the process.
So I'm an engineer. So people ask me a question and I come up with a tool. So the question that I was asked was, you know, what are you journaling about? Because journaling is like an instant replay. It's like watching the first thing you do is in a sport, you look at the big TV if you're playing hockey, instant replay of the goal or instant replay of the penalty. You're gonna look at it. Like journaling is an instant replay of your life. If you want to get better at your life, instant replay your life. And that's journaling. It's a great habit. And everybody should do this. Everybody should journal. All the masters do it. All the leaders do it. Journaling. Okay. So, and you know, so what do you journal about? Like people say, what do I journal about? Like I'm grateful. I got tired of gratefulness, whatever. Right. So what I did is I said, it takes 66 days to make a habit. So what I did is I took the most popular quotes that people liked on Instagram. And so there's 66 quotes like that. Little quotes that I came up with that people liked. Then I looked at my journal, my personal journal, and I said, what was this quote about? Because every quote has a journal entry. And I gave you my personal journal entry. That's what I said. It's pretty raw.
You shared your journal.
Yeah, this is my journal entry.
Yeah. Oh, hi.
Okay. And then I gave you a place to journal as a consideration. So people like, when I'm giving you, this is the same thing I just said, I don't give you what to write. I give you a place to look. I give you a tool and I give you a place to look. Consider writing about this, right? Place to look. So that at the end of the 66 days, you will have a habit of journaling. That's my gift to you, right?
Wow.
And why is that important? It's going to change your life, guaranteed. Like I'm crying just thinking about it. It's going to change your life. This is such a powerful tool. Not this, but journaling. You don't need this. You know, like you can journal. It's cheap. You don't need to buy a book to journal. Like journal, like just journal. And like I can coach you on a journal. It'd be my pleasure to do that. It's just a tool to do that. Yeah. And so.
Yves, I literally could. I honestly could talk to you for hours, and I probably will have you on multiple times because I think there are many topics that I feel that are near and dear to your heart, but also that you have this extreme passion that can ooze out of you that will educate my audience on, you know, how to level up as a leader and show up in the way that our community so desperately needs right now. The communities worldwide need strong, competent, but vulnerable leadership right now. And I think, I know that you are that, and I give you uber kudos, but so much heart for showing up for the people that you lead and within your organization. I love that you're continuing to show up on social media. And so, you know, for those of you that want to know more about Yves, you know, go to his website, but also make sure to look in the show notes because I'll be dropping his social media feeds as well and follow him because he has some very, very quick but thought-provoking videos that he shares on a very regular basis. And he's also doing yoga, live yoga streams every day. So you can do yoga with Yves if you'd like.
That's a good way to give back to my community, right? And I said, how do I give back? And I don't have any money, so I give that.
But hey, you're giving back in ways that I'm not entirely sure money could have that same impact, right? Like you definitely impacted me, and now we're going to impact that many more people together because of this interview. So thank you, sir, from the bottom of my heart. I appreciate you, and I can't wait to have another conversation just like this again.
Thank you, Darianne.